from spooky legends past, down through generations, to haunted locations that hold a ghostly past. Come one, come all, come finders and seekers, hear the creepy side of Nepa.
Hello and welcome to the 25th episode of The Creepy Side of Nepa. I am Dan Kozlowski. Before we get started with tonight's episode, I'd just like to thank all of our repeat listeners and also welcome in any new listeners to The Creepy Side of Nepa. We are always looking for ideas for upcoming episodes. If you have a personal creepy paranormal experience that happened to you in northeastern or central Pennsylvania, or maybe you just have an idea of a topic we could cover in an upcoming episode, please let us know. You could contact us through our Facebook page, WNEP's Creepy Side of Nepa. Or you could also email us at ghost@WNEP.com. We'd love hearing from you. Joining us tonight are some members of the High Spirits of Palmerton Paranormal Group. We have co-founders Larissa and Alan and also investigator Candace. They are here to talk about some of their favorite investigations over the past few years and also talk a little bit about ghost hunting in general. Welcome to the show tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How did you guys get interested in the whole paranormal?
So I've been a psychic medium my whole life. So I've always been exposed to paranormal activity pretty much everywhere I go. There's dead people everywhere. And so it's just always been something that I have been interested in because I kind of can't get away from it. But I retired from the military a couple years ago, and one of my dreams was to start a paranormal group. So when Alan and I got together and I shared with him my gift, so to speak, he, you know, kind of nudged me in the direction of buying some equipment and starting investigating. So the two of us went out on our own investigating. And then after we figured out how much work went into actually doing what we do and how much equipment you need, we realized that we didn't have enough hands for all the equipment. So we started to build a team outside of ourselves.
Now, to spark your interest, did something happen to you personally, or is it something you just always had an interest in?
No, I've always been able to communicate with the dead. So I've always had exposure to paranormal activity. It's been around me since I'm as young as 2 years old, I've been exposed to it. So it's not that I had an interest sparked. It's just that I've always had it in my life. And so, you know, you can go two ways with that. You can ignore it or you can foster that gift and use it for something good. And so that's what I decided to do after I got out of the Army.
And Alan, how did you get interested in the whole paranormal subject?
I got interested last year in June for Larissa's birthday. Myself and the children, we decided to get her some paranormal equipment to kind of push her along that journey she wanted to go on. So at that point, you know, we started expanding our arsenal. Myself personally, I was a little skeptical at first until I see the scientific evidence and the way that Larissa can read the space kind of proves to me that the paranormal is real.
Yeah, of course. The evidence sort of backs that up, and it's something that you can't really disprove.
That's correct, yes.
And Candace, how did you get involved in the group?
I was a guest investigator on an investigation in Virginia with them, and I met them, and I liked their style. I liked how they conducted their investigations, and they invited me to become a member, and I have been a member ever since.
Very interesting. Now, do you guys mostly do your investigations locally in the Palmerton area, or do you guys sort of branch out and go a little bit farther?
So we started in Palmerton, but we actually will go out pretty far. We've been as far as Ohio, been as far south as Virginia. We would go further than that. We just recently actually asked Candace to be the head of our chapter. So we're going to branch out and have a chapter in the Maryland, Virginia area. So we're kind of expanding now. And to get to the back to your question, yes, we will investigate pretty much anywhere that we can travel to. And to the point where we're actually going to be going to Kentucky this summer. So we will go places if we're asked to.
When you travel out to Kentucky and different places like that, are most of these people contacting you with a story or with evidence or a property that they own, or are you contacting them to go out and investigate?
So it goes both ways. When we go to Kentucky, we're going to a famous place, Waverly Hills Sanitarium and Bob Mackey's.
Okay.
Those are the two places. So we actually reached out to those places. But when it comes to other investigations, like, you know, we will go to people's homes that call us. Just today, somebody contacted us out in Idaho. So, you know, we will go pretty far out to help some people out. You know, it just depends really on, we have kids too, so it depends on whether or not we can actually get to it.
And what are some of your most memorable investigations? I'm sure you guys had quite a few of them, especially in this area, and then especially when you guys branch out into Kentucky and different states like you were mentioning.
Bell Grove is definitely at the top of our list for one of the most incredible places. That's where we actually met Candace. Bell Grove is in Virginia, and it's just notoriously haunted, but it's more friendly ghosts. That's definitely one of the favorites that's long distance because we had so much activity there. It took a couple weeks to get through our evidence. That's how much we had. Just recently, we did the old Times News building in Lehighton and had incredible, incredible evidence there. So that's a local one that was fantastic. I don't know about Candace, where she's been, you know, other than Bell Grove with us. I don't know where that is for you, Candace.
Bell Grove would be my favorite investigation with y'all so far.
What are some things you guys found in Bell Grove?
Oh, man. Where do we start? where do we start? So the first thing that happened with Bell Grove that's pretty cool is as a medium, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes a spirit will, they know you're coming, and they will try to make an appearance in your location to warn you or let you know that they know. So the night before we left for Bell Grove, I was cooking in my kitchen and this man appeared that had on 1800s clothing. And I went to my daughter, who's also a medium and she's an artist. And I said, please sketch this for me, because when we get to Bell Grove, if this is one of the entities there, I'm going to need proof that this guy came to the house before we ever left for Bell Grove. So she sketched him. His name is George Turner. When we got to Bell Grove, unbelievably, my husband and I were given the George Turner suite.
And oh, wow. What a coincidence there.
Can you believe that? We went upstairs. We looked on the binder in the room, which each room has a binder with its history. And there was the very man that stood in my kitchen the night before. And I put a sketch of my daughter against the picture. And I said, this is unbelievable. This is the same guy. Well, Mr. Turner was waiting for us and he followed us around that investigation. And one of the most incredible pieces of evidence was caught on a motion camera. As I'm walking by the motion camera, you can see my legs. And then in the next frame, you see very obvious ghostly legs going by. So some crazy stuff at Bell Grove.
Yeah. Now, what exactly is Bell Grove?
It's a mansion that it was around during the Civil War. They had a battle right out front. The Union soldiers went in and they, you know, unfortunately slaughtered everybody inside of the home. So there's just, I think they said 89, Candace, am I right? Is it 89 spirits in the house that they confirmed?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's quite a bit.
It's also the birthplace of James Madison.
Okay. So it definitely has some history behind it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you're mentioning the local investigation you guys recently did at a Times building?
Yep, the old Times News building on Iron Street in Lehighton.
What was some interesting evidence you guys found there?
I was doing a reading in the basement, and I picked up on a homeless man that stays down there, causes some trouble for the tenants. He does not like people coming down into that space. He will make you feel watched. He'll breathe down your neck. You name it. When we go into these investigations, just a caveat, I do not like to have history because obviously that, you know, can cause a problem with my credibility. So I try to go in as blind as possible. So I started reading the space and I saw the man actually clutching his chest and stumbling around in that area and then stumbling outside. And in the video clip, you'll see me actually saying to the two people who called us for the investigation, what was this building before? And they didn't know the answer. And then I said, well, I'm seeing this man and he's clutching his chest. I'm not sure if he died inside or outside. And then there's an EVP and he answers me and he says outside.
Well, and you had no outside knowledge of this before you started the investigation?
No. And there's no way to prove who this person is either because I didn't, you know, get a name on him or anything like that.
And what was the building before that? The newspaper, you said, in Lehighton?
It was the old Times News building in Lehighton. And the only history, so in the beginning of our videos, when we go live, we will say, you know, what I do know beforehand. Mm-hmm. And what I was, the knowledge I was given beforehand was that it was obviously the news building. Before that, it was vacant. There was a fire in the building. There's a family there that died of smallpox that they could confirm from historical records, but they didn't know who was in the family, like daughters, sons, or anything like that. And then it was also a movie theater at one time. But it did sit vacant for quite a minute. So at the beginning of an investigation, when we go live, I will say, hey, I know all this stuff. But that's pretty much all we knew about the building going in.
Very interesting, especially since you get these visions and stuff. I'm sure that helps the rest of the group doing their investigations.
Yes. And Candace is sensitive also. So there's, you know, levels of psychic. So she's sensitive. And kind of, we're not really sure exactly what kind of psychic she is, but we can just say sensitive for now. So what the people on the team that are sensitive or empath or psychic, I will often ask them if they can confirm what I'm feeling or, you know, are they feeling the same thing or whatever. So we try to get more of a metaphysical, you know, confirmation on top of our actual scientific data. So we will just, you know, we will use everybody in the team to do that. But I do the main readings.
Now, does each member of your team have their own responsibilities in these investigations?
Yes. My husband, Alan, is often the alpha team leader. And then we have a Bravo team leader. And that usually is another lead investigator. So we've had Candace lead some of our investigations. And then we have two other lead investigators that will do it as well. And then outside those lead investigators, what they do is they keep everybody on point, on task, keep everybody quiet. They direct people when it's time to do experiments. You know, they pretty much just lead the team. And we will often split up in the larger locations into those teams so that we're not compromising each other's evidence. But then everybody on the team itself, outside of the team leader, is assigned to either a photography role, the role with the video camera or the SLS, we call it. Somebody will be on meters. So, we have different roles for people.
Now, do you think between you and Candace's psychic abilities, you think that's something that sort of sets your group apart from the others?
I know that there are other groups that have psychics on them. I don't think that sets us apart. I think what sets us apart is how militarized we are, which works in some ways. And then, you know, it works in most ways, I should say. By putting everything in such an organized manner, we really do reduce down the amount of contaminated evidence we have. So if everybody's got a task and everybody's on point, we know that people are not going to be whispering. They're not going to be going off and doing their own thing. I'm not saying that other investigators don't have an organization to them, but the one that we have, I have not seen other people have.
Right. It definitely helps knowing what everyone's doing when you're going back and going through that evidence.
Right.
So, Alan, what is one of your most memorable investigations or evidence that you found over the time that you're with the group?
One of the most memorable places that we've been definitely has been Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum or the Weston State Hospital out in West Virginia.
I did hear that location on a couple of TV shows over the past. What is something you guys found out there?
There's so much.
Yeah, there's so much. There's so much that's gone on. We've been out there twice. The last time we went out there was in February. And
the little girl, Lily.
Yeah, the that little girl, cool. Lily. Do you want to tell that story?
Cause no, he asked you. You tell it.
That's okay.
So there's you know, again, when you go into these investigations, some of them you can't help but know a lot about the location. So Trans-Allegheny, we were there twice. The second time we went, we were in the main building, and the main building had the nursing staff. It had the doctors in it. And then it had some other corridors that had your violent males and whatnot. There's a famous murder. There's something called the murder room. We had, I think for Alan, which he's forgetting, is one of the memorable things was in that murder room where I was doing something called a phasma box experiment. And my stepson, Austin, who also investigates with us, was inside of the room with me. And then Alan was outside of the room with our daughter who does investigations with us. And as he was asking questions, I cannot hear the questions. I have on noise canceling earphones.
Okay.
And I speak whatever the phasma box tells me. So he asked the question, do you have any other messages for us? And I shouted out, kill yourself. And at that time, he came in the room and said, okay, we're done. We're done here.
Yeah. Another good one at Trans-Allegheny I remember from this past trip is we were in this one area And during the tour, Larissa's not listening. She has her fingers in her ear so she can't hear what the tour guide's saying. But in this one area, the tour guide says, people who sit in this chair behind them in the room hear screaming and yelling at them. So when we came down to that area during the night and the investigation, Larissa had no idea, but I was kind of setting her up. And I said, why don't you go sit in that chair, see what happens. So as soon as Larissa sat down, she was like, I hear yelling and screaming. And before you know it, on the SLS, you pick up something mapped to the right of her and something down in front of her looking like it was down, looking up at her and screaming at him.
Yeah, that was intense.
Yeah, that sounds intense. Now, one question I had for you when you were just saying that story, for any of our listeners, what exactly is the SOS?
So the SLS is actually called the structured, it stands for structured light sensor. What it does is it takes thermal imaging from the environment and then infrared imaging. And so basically what we can't see, and it will change those into kinetic energy. So it works with the Kinect system of PlayStation, if you've ever played on the Kinect.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Xbox. I'm mixing up my game station.
That's okay.
Xbox. And what's interesting about it, just so you know, for your listeners, is that it started out as being just the Kinect system, but people would be playing video games and then see something mapped next to them that was another person and be like, oh my God, what is that? So then the paranormal community kind of latched onto it, but it works by mapping those two different things in the atmosphere and changing it to kinetic energy. And then it will map it into whatever it is. It could be a person in front of you, or, you know, whatever's really moving and causing that change in the environment.
Very interesting, especially that it started as a toy, basically. Then you guys, the Paranormal Society, just sort of latched on and found out another use for it.
Yeah, well, the same thing goes with Ouija boards, right?
Yeah, that's true.
They were whispers too.
Yep. And Candace, what is something, investigation-wise, like, what is your favorite piece of evidence?
My favorite piece of evidence? I really like the SLS camera. The footage that picks up is really good. I also like the thermal imaging cameras that we have. Both Larissa, Alan, and I have our own thermal imager, and that picks up wonderful stuff. Really simple to use. Electricians use them all the time, and paranormal, I mean, why not use them, right?
Exactly.
So my favorite evidence would probably be my thermal imaging evidence, but you can't argue with that.
Yeah, especially when you have it right in front of you, and you could, exactly, there's no argument when you have the proof in front of you.
Exactly.
So we went to a place called Brinton Lodge, which is the home of the first mill in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It was owned by William Penn. It was first piece of property he ever owned coming over. It was granted to him from the king himself. So that's how far back this history goes. This place is incredibly haunted and fantastic. When we were in there, I walked in, again, didn't know the history of it, walked in, looked around, and I saw what looked like not the loyalists, the other side, the revolutionary people, all sitting around and smoking and joking and just sipping cordials and smoking pipes. And I was looking around at them, and I pretty much started to talk to them. And I had another investigator, one of our leads, Rachel Moser, with us. And we had another guest who was a skeptic on the SLS. And he was holding the SLS. And as I go to walk away, I said to them, goodbye, guys. You know, I was pretty much done. I was walking away from them. Rachel turns around and she says, they're back over there by the window. So I was like, what? So I go back over by the window and I start joking around and I'm like, do you know who, you know, King George is, you know, just asking them questions like that. And right after I said, do you know who King George is? You can hear in an EVP clear as day, somebody English goes pip, pip and cheerio. We didn't hear it until we got home and we were doing evidence review and we were like, what is that? It is so loud. It sounds like somebody is right there saying it.
And where was this location at? You said it earlier.
Brinton Lodge. It's right outside of it's in Bucks County.
OK. Yeah, definitely sounds like that was a hotbed of activity at that location.
Oh, it was so that was one of our most fun locations. We had a lot of activity in the former brothel. I mean, it was amazing. That was amazing, too.
Now, when you guys get people contacting you, are they contacting you mostly for help in this instance, or just they want some kind of evidence to back up their stories?
So I would say, I don't know what they're contacting Candace for in Maryland, but for us up here, people are contacting us for two reasons. One, they are in a situation where they are starting to feel like they're crazy, which I can relate to because, you know, how I, you know, growing up the way that I did and people not believing what you say. So they contact you to confirm that, yes, they are experiencing something paranormal or they're not. And, you know, maybe they do need to get checked. I don't know. But I would say 100% of the time that we've investigated, they have been correct. It's been paranormal. The other reason we get contacted is for help. And it's more often for help than not, because unfortunately, regardless of your religious background, churches don't like to get involved in this, and they haven't historically liked to get involved in this. So when you have something happening and you can't control it, you can't defend yourself against it, who do you call? So these people look for paranormal investigators, and they oftentimes look for a medium to try and come in and talk with the spirits and figure out what's going on. And that's actually what happened with us. And Candace was on this investigation with us, the one in Palmerton here, where the woman reached out because she was pretty much being attacked. Her animals were being attacked, and it was for help. So most of the time it's for help.
And Candace, you see the same thing mostly in Maryland? People are contacting for help?
They're contacting for help. And like Larissa said, for validation, so they know, okay, other people are experiencing this too. It's not just us. It's been my experience down here in Maryland. It's pretty much the same thing. People just really needing help. They don't know where else to turn, and they need credible people to come in and help them.
Yeah, I had a couple different groups on over the past, we're doing this podcast for just about 2 years now. We're coming up on 2 years, and they all sort of said the same thing. People are just looking for validation, or like they just need help. They have nowhere else to turn.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But you'd be surprised how many places are haunted and how many people who didn't believe in the paranormal suddenly become believers because they find themselves in a situation that they can't control.
Yep, and you always have the people who don't believe, but they have that one story that they just can't explain.
Correct.
We had an episode back in last summer of we had people call in and share their stories, and I found a lot of that. People were like, I didn't believe until this one thing happened to me, whatever that one thing may have been.
Yeah, we have that a lot.
Now, if somebody's out there looking for help or needs some validation to their stories, how will they get in contact with you?
So we have a website, and we have our Facebook page. We have Twitter. We have Instagram. I do not reject friend requests on my personal page as well, which I'm sure is going to bite me eventually, but I don't. because, you know, I want people to be able to reach out and,
sure.
So they can contact us that way. It's, highspiritsofpalmertonparanormal.com. Or again, you could find us on Facebook, High Spirits of Palmerton Paranormal.
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us tonight. It was very interesting talking to you guys.
Oh, thank you so
Thanks
much
for having us.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a great night.
You too.
You too.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Creepy Side of NEPA. Be sure to like our Facebook page, WNEP's Creepy Side of NEPA. That is the best way to be informed on future episodes and anything else we might have planned. Until next time, enjoy the creepy side of NEPA.
This has been the Creepy Side of NEPA. If you have a spooky story that took place in northeastern or central Pennsylvania, send it to ghost@WNEP.com for your chance to share it on an upcoming episode. We're dying to hear from you.